CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Vision Zero Vancouver is a local nonprofit organization that is advocating for one very specific thing: zero deaths and serious injuries on Metro Vancouver streets. An ambitious goal, but one that Vision Zero is continuing to fight for through providing educational resources, advocating for specific policy changes, and public campaigns, including a new Vision Zero public billboard, which aims to raise awareness on unsafe road conditions within Vancouver that are often considered normal. CJSF reached out to Vision Zero for more information on this billboard campaign and what the organization hopes it's able to achieve. We were able to speak with Dylan Pereira, an advocacy coordinator for Vision Zero, on the campaign and the organization's overall objectives.
This is a really critical priority, and that far too many people are injured and die for entirely preventable reasons on roads all across Canada and North America, but particularly here in Metro Vancouver. And yeah, our focus is advocating for measures to help try to make Vision Zero a reality. We tend to place a particular emphasis on more kind of systematic measures. You will see kind of like other sort of traffic safety or awareness campaigns that will be like, hey, pay more attention while you're driving, or, you know, things about like, hey, if you're a pedestrian or a cyclist, you should wear brightly colored clothes so that drivers can see you. And it's not that those things can't be useful, but I think we really want to kind of tackle this from the top down and tackle these kind of like bigger reasons related to like policy and road design.
We then asked Pereira to further explain the billboard, which reads, "Smoking tables next to non-smoking tables used to be normal too. Join us in fighting for safer streets."
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I guess just for anyone listening who hasn't seen our billboard, it's a picture of a large transport truck and a really narrow painted bike lane with like a child riding a bike. And yeah, this should not be normal. It's extremely dangerous. And it's honestly pretty wild to us that this is something that we're kind of expected to accept as normal. And, you know, I mean, just in the same way that in the past people would say, oh, you're in the smoking section, or if you're not in the smoking section, you're going to be protected from secondhand smoke. That's just absolutely not true. And I mean, I think kind of in a similar way, having like a thin line painted on a road is certainly not doing anything to protect anyone, any road user. I mean, particularly people like children. But yeah, we just want to really highlight that this is really kind of absurd, and this is really wild that this exists. And just because it's normal now, we sort of envision a future where this is no longer normal, and where people look back on things like this and, you know, they're able to see that this is kind of just as strange or just as unsafe as things like smoking sections in restaurants. So
later on, we asked what the community response and engagement has been with this billboard campaign.
Yeah, for the community response, though, it's generally been pretty positive. I feel like we've been getting quite a bit of traction on social media. We've had a few different media outlets reach out to us for comments and interviews about this. I feel like some people are maybe a little bit confused. We had one person in the comments on a social media post saying that bike lanes are the smoking tables and they want to get rid of the bike lanes. So not everybody's going to get it, and that's okay. But I think we also kind of enjoy that we are sort of sparking some conversation. It's kind of cool that we were able to do something that does make people stop and think a little bit. And yeah, we want to spark a conversation and kind of see what this brings up for people.
Lastly, we asked Dylan Pereira what sort of change Vision Zero is hoping to affect within the coming months.
We have a number of campaigns ongoing and a bunch more coming up. And yeah, really a lot of what we do is about trying to, build awareness in the public, but then to kind of get the public to direct that towards, you know, emailing your counselors, calling your counselors, telling them about your priorities, and when election time comes around, also voting with those priorities in mind.
Once again, that was our interview with Dylan Pereira, an advocacy coordinator for Vision Zero Vancouver, on the organization's new billboard campaign, which promotes the idea of denormalizing unsafe road conditions. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Never thought I would be this free from Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was Free From God by Big City, featuring former CJSF music director Kata Yoon. Cool stuff, that coming out on Ila Records from Mexico City. And now I'm going to play you a recording of a press conference that I attended last week, where several BC gender justice and anti-violence organizations met with the Minister for Women and Gender Equality and just checked in on a whole bunch of things, including the worrying news that that department would be losing 80% of its budget. It seems like that may not be the case, according to reassurances from the minister, but I will now just dive right into that, and that'll take us right until Democracy Now! See you next time.
It has been a really great afternoon where we had a chance to meet with Minister Reshi Valdez, who is the Minister of Women and Gender Equality, as well as Small Business, Secretary of State of Small Business and Tourism. Thank you, my goodness. And we had incredible representation from all around the province of gender justice and anti-violence organizations that spoke to the minister about key issues for the sector, as well as for advancing gender equality and addressing violence against women and gender-based violence here in British Columbia. We highlighted some unique qualities, some unique issues that are specific to British Columbia. We know that British Columbia is a unique province within the country of Canada. It's quite unique in the way that we organize ourselves and certainly how we address the issues. And we're coming on the heels of Dr. Kim Stanton's systemic review of the legal system that had looked at violence against women and gender-based violence through the lens of the legal system and advocating, frankly, for systemic accountability and intervention. So today has been a really important day for us in British Columbia, and this provincial roundtable has been the first time that we've been able to speak directly to the federal government since we've had a new federal government. So I think in overall, this has been a vital opportunity to highlight the key issues around violence against women and gender-based violence, but also to seek to hold the Canadian government accountable for advancing gender equality. We know that this issue is an issue that we think is eroding. There's evidence to show that we're losing ground, and we're concerned, of course, that our federal government won't understand the importance of advancing gender equality now in light of the emphasis on resource extraction projects and, quote unquote, the economy, and not recognizing the role of women and girls and gender diverse people and how important addressing gender equality is for the broader economic goals within Canada. And with that, I'll pass it to my colleagues.
I'm Sharon Gregson. I work with the Coalition of Childcare Advocates of BC, and I'm the provincial spokesperson for the $10 a day childcare campaign. It was a good meeting with Minister Valdez, and clearly she was interested in the childcare issue. She responded well, because it's so clear that British Columbia and Canada will not achieve gender equality without an accessible, high-quality $10 a day childcare system where educators are valued and fairly compensated. This is integral to economic vitality in our communities, in our province, and across the country. Unfortunately, in British Columbia, only 25% of children have access to any licensed childcare, and only 3% of those children have got access to $10 a day childcare. Educators are still not fairly compensated. And so there is a lot of room for improvement, and we were heartened to hear Minister Valdez say that the budget for women and gender equality in Canada is not being cut, and so we'll look forward to the federal budget and ensure that we still see that line item. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ninu Kang. I'm the Executive Director of Ending Violence Association of BC. Meeting with the Minister, Minister Valdez, today, it was really heartening to see all of my colleagues around the table express some of the key issues that are impacting survivors of gender-based violence, of course, across Canada, but in particular, some of the key issues in Vancouver. We know that there is a 10-year national action plan to end gender-based violence, which is a commitment of the federal government. We're 3 years in, and it was really heartening to hear from the minister that the plans are to continue the 10-year commitment to the national action plan. We know that those pillars of priorities that have been created in the national action plan have been created by wealth of knowledge from the frontline anti-violence sectors. And we really encourage the minister to go back to that plan, continue to make a commitment to that plan, and we will work hand in hand with her to ensure that the implementation of that plan is done in a good way. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Lori Hanna. I'm the executive director of an organization called West Coast Community Resources. We're located on the far west coast and the communities of Ucuilute and Tofino. I'm really happy to be here because the rural and remote voice is often not heard. Some things or statistics, so for instance, Tofino and the surrounding community of Ahouset and Opitzit and Esawista has 3 times higher sexual assault than the rest of the province. So there's really concerning aspects that we really want to bring forward. There's 1 in 3 women in BC that are sexually assaulted, 1 in 10 men, 1 in 2 transgendered, non-conforming people, and 1/2 of Indigenous women. And this is all very alarming. And so, but it was really great to hear the minister's reference to the rural communities and how she's really listening to what they're saying. And I actually wanted to see if any of my northern colleagues online would want to speak to any of the other comments.
My name is Lynelle Holikowski. I'm the executive director of the Prince George Sexual Assault Center in the traditional unceded territory of the Kwajalein Tene people. We are 1 of 5 sexual assault centers in the province funded by the provincial government. I was very encouraged to hear Minister Valdez confirm that northern, rural, and remote communities are on their radar, because I was particularly concerned about natural resource development and that being prioritized over women and safety and gender equality. And she assured us that man camps and resource, they are looking at it through that lens with gender equality and gender-based violence. So I felt really encouraged leaving that meeting today and the commitment to move forward with the gender-based violence action plan.
Hi there. I am Lisa Schmidt. I am with Kasan Society in Terrace as a director of counseling and support programs. I'm stepping in for Amanda Owens, our executive director today. We're on the unceded territories of the Kitsum Kalum and Kitsilis First Nations. I was grateful to be part of this roundtable today, and I could feel the energy in the room, even though I'm virtually here, and I appreciated being present. I appreciate all the voices, and I echo what's been said already. But something that's just standing out for me, aside from what I had said to the minister that came up that I heard, is I'm really grateful, happy to hear that people are addressing how men and boys are being raised and what's being done to address how men and boys are participating in the gender-based violence, and they truly need supports as well. Women and girls need supports. We need to stop the gender-based violence that's occurring. So it's not just the main focus of what are the programs and services that we don't have, but how do we educate and stop this from happening in the first place. So thank you very much for allowing us to represent the North.
Hello, my name is Amy Fitzgerald. I'm the executive director of the BC Society of Transition Houses, the provincial umbrella organization for all the women's transition houses across the province, the 137 members. I was grateful to be here today and meet the minister. We congratulated her on her appointment. We congratulated her on the bringing back of the wage of Women and Gender Equality Canada back to the cabinet table. And we committed to working together collaboratively to ensure that the National Action Plan is actually enforced and held accountable, and she made a commitment to that. And we also highlighted the housing need in British Columbia, in particular the fact that there isn't enough safe and affordable and long-term housing for women, children, youth fleeing violence, and how the new Canada Builds Home legislation as well as the National Housing Strategy can work together in collaboration with WAGE to meet the housing needs for women, children, youth fleeing violence. And we know that secure, long-term, safe and affordable housing is one of the key levers for women's safety and women's equality moving forward. So we were grateful for the conversation and look forward to working with her moving forward. Thanks. Thank you.
My name is Shannon Dobb. I'm the executive director of West Coast Leaf. The news earlier this summer that the federal government planned an 80% reduction in the budget for the Ministry of Women and Gender Equality was profoundly shocking to organizations like ours, fighting for the rights of women and gender diverse people every day. We were very pleased to hear the minister today tell us that she will advocate strongly at the cabinet table to ensure that that funding for these vital services is protected. Whether it's in relation to leaving abusive relationships, reporting violence, accessing housing, or any number of other vital services, it is the organizations here today that support and advocate alongside women and gender diverse people, and an 80% cut to the Ministry of Women and Gender Equality would be absolutely devastating.
Thank you so much. All right, any questions?
Krista Robinson, Global BC. I was just wondering, Angela, was the meeting with the minister, I mean, what was your goal of the meeting, and was that goal accomplished?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We wanted to center British Columbia and these issues here in BC. We think we're unique, and we wanted her to understand how unique we are, and also to recognize that we have an incredible matrix of support services and gender justice advocates within the organization. So we wanted her to see the power of our voice and the work that's happening here on the ground, knowing that we are prepared to support her here, but also to link arms with our colleagues across the country in order to advance gender equality. We're a little bit nervous about where this country's going around gender equality right now and addressing violence against women. The signals aren't looking great. So we wanted to look in her eyes and to make sure that she understood what's at stake so that she can go back to Ottawa and carry our voices forward. But we have to differentiate ourselves from Ottawa. And we definitely think that we did that today.
What is it going to take to stop gender-based violence, and including all of the murders that we saw within just like 3 weeks this summer of women who were targeted allegedly by their intimate partners and killed? What is it going to take to stop that, and are you confident that she is on the right path to take us there?
That's a very important question, because we highlighted for sure the number of femicides here in British Columbia, but we recognize that our colleagues across the country also are dealing with femicides as well. It's uncertain if we can see what the results will be. She says that the National Action Plan on Gender-Based Violence is a priority. So if we take her at her word, then we recognize that the action plan will continue beyond the 5 years and into the 10 years. But we have to increase the investments in that action plan. And that's something that we did not hear today.
You mentioned that the signals are not looking great for Ottawa in terms of gender equality. What sort of signals are you seeing that have you worried?
Well, we're seeing an increase in everything in terms of the manosphere, all of the regression that we have in terms of violence against women. Femicide has increased. We cannot ignore the fact that we're seeing more women killed now than we saw in 2019 and previous. So that tells us something very serious is going on in the culture. Will the government recognize this and prioritize that? We see from her a commitment, but she has a big piece of work to do in order to raise the profile of this issue within Ottawa. But that's the case with every government, whether it's Ottawa or the provincial governments or the municipal governments. Right now, nobody's prioritized violence against women and gender-based violence in terms of ending it. And this is what we're seeking to disrupt and to advance, the kind of interventions that we need that are going to get to the root of the problem that includes prevention, but it's also intervention.
Jesse Monsalve, CGSN. What differentiates BC from the rest of the country when it comes to these issues?
So the $10 a day child care plan actually started in British Columbia. It was launched by the advocates and our allies back in 2011. It started here first in 2018. The federal government started to invest in 10-a-day child care across the country in 2021. We will not achieve gender equity and gender justice if we don't have further investment into high quality, affordable $10 a day child care where the educators are valued and compensated. And we're not seeing that happen in British Columbia right now. Off to a good start back in 2018. We've stalled progress, unfortunately. The federal government has just signed a new 5-year agreement with BC. We need BC to deliver and continue its investment. So we've got to see levels of government working together. And we certainly saw today from the minister her interest in childcare and connecting it to gender justice issues.
So tragically, BC is the least affordable place to live in all of Canada, so we are at a deficit there. We're also at a deficit in terms of the support services for women, children, youth fleeing violence. We do a snapshot on an annual basis, and every year in our snapshot, women, children, and youth are turned away from our houses because they don't have the capacity to meet the need. We have waiting lists for our second stage housing, we have waiting lists for our long-term housing, and we have waiting lists for transition houses. So I think the housing affordability really creates a significant bottleneck for women when they make that brave decision to go into a shelter, and they're staying longer and longer and longer in transitional spaces because there's nothing to transition to. So I think we've got a long way to go in BC on the affordability that impacts women's safety. And they return, our statistics show that many of them, 75% of them, return to abusive situations. So they're trading safety and housing in British Columbia.
I'm Lori Hanna with West Coast Community Resource Society.
In particular on the West Coast, our living wage is $27.40 an hour, and that's for a family of four just to live. And that's like impossible. Hardly any employers ever offer that. And with that, you know, rentals, there's, you know, not even affording it, there's a limited amount. So I think, you know, that's an aspect. And it's also, you know, we do have a really diverse population out here. Our Indigenous population makes up, you know, the local schools, it's almost half. So I think there's some really unique things that impact the West Coast, the geography, and it's not only like land, there's constant, you know, on the island, there's constant power outages, there's constant, like, this landslide, there's constant fires, you know, there's a lot of environmental aspects that go into just trying to figure out how to get people to services that are a huge obstacle on the West Coast. You know, we have these beautiful resources like mountains and oceans, but they also create a lot of obstacles. We have a First Nations community that's a 40-minute boat ride, that's over 1,000 people on this area, and they're in a reserve and they're limited with what they can do, you know? So we're creating obstacles and keeping people in states of trauma because we're not supporting them properly.
And do you see potential solutions for that or yeah. strategies?
Yeah, like the thing is, you know, the sector, the nonprofits have the solutions. They have the ideas. There's a wealth of knowledge. It's just, it takes human resources. It doesn't just happen. And it takes longevity. It takes a long time to build trusting relationships with communities, with people, to be able to help to create change, you know. So you need that, like, long-term funding basically to help create those sustainable programs that build trust, to help people, like, move through their trauma and to heal.
And you know, there's sort of the commitment to the 10-year plan, but that's still somewhat project-based. Mm-hmm. Would you like to see core funding or?
Oh my gosh, I would be so happy to see core funding for our programs. And also, like, you know, there's a lot of funding that goes directly to the workers, but there also needs core funding for the management team to run the programs, and even to have the whole umbrella of supports to support the staff. Because what we see is there's a huge turnover. Our transition house workers get burnt out. You know, we really need to support, and they're also the lowest paid in the sector too, similar to ECE workers. So we really need to value these positions that are predominantly women. So for instance, in BC, the minimum, like, for every dollar men make, women are still only making 83 cents, and that's unacceptable. We need to, like, elevate everyone, you know, so we can, like, you know, just have an even playing field so people can just work through things. So, yeah. We just need to do better.
When you start peeling it back, it's clear how interrelated it all is too, mm-hmm. right? You know, that, you know, the work of women in traditionally, like, female dominated mm-hmm. fields is undervalued in the same way that the focus on violence against women and non-gender yeah. conforming people is an epidemic, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we just really need a societal mind shift. And I even see it in, like, you know, how we support people who are coming and presenting at our health units, like the Tofino General Hospital, for instance. If you present with, like, a substance issue, it's not considered, you know, you won't get supported the same if you present with a broken leg. But we really have to change our mindset, because they're wanting support to just heal themselves. And, you know, and it would be so much more beneficial if we could see that lens, that this is also, like, a mental illness, you know, and not put up so many barriers when someone's presenting, because they want to stop drinking, but they need certain medication to do that. They need to be in a safe space. Like, it can be very dangerous to all of a sudden try to become sober. So we really need to create, like, systems that create, you know, like, sobering centers and treatment centers. We need to create all the pieces, and we have all the knowledge to do it. So it's just not going to happen without some funds and some government commitments. on all levels, municipal, provincial, and federal, like it was mentioned.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Stimulus.